Council, please.
Speaking.
Vidi, this is Brent Kelly. I wrote you a week or so ago about talking to you about the bonus babies the Cubs had.
Yeah.
Is this a good time? Could we talk now?
Yeah, this would be all right.
Okay.
I don't know what I have to offer you.
Well, I don't either, but maybe, you know, it'll be more than I had before we started. I appreciate your time. And if I don't sound real coherent, I just got back from the dentist, and I didn't realize how numb my mouth was until I just started talking to you. Am I talking clearly?
Yeah.
Okay. It feels very funny. The left half of my face is not functioning as I try to move my lips. The Cubs signed, you were the, I guess in the 50s, you were the head scout for the Cubs. Is that correct?
Well, no, not really. I worked in the office. Scouted around the Chicago area and went out on special assignments.
Okay.
Double checked some players.
Okay. Like the cross checkers are today, sort of.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Cubs signed three bonus babies. A pitcher named Dave Kaiser in 1955 out of Oklahoma, which I guess you probably wouldn't have seen him. And then Jerry Kendall and Mo Drabowski, which you may well have. I know you saw Kendall.
No.
Did you see Drabowski before he was signed?
Trying to think, where did he come out of?
Indiana, I think. Now let me find that. I've got just papers. Where did he come out of? I don't. One of these days I've got to get organized. Okay, but you were present at the signing of Kendall.
Right.
And evidently took a pretty hard look at him. The Cubs were not one of the more active teams in signing bonus babies. So evidently they must have gone over them pretty well before they decided to spend that kind of money. Obviously you must have thought Kendall had the potential. Was he able at that time, do you think, given the opportunity to actually play Major League Baseball?
Well, he was pretty close to it.
So it was...
He had a real good year his last year in the Big Ten. I believe they were in the College World Series his senior year.
Right, they won it, I believe, that's his last year.
Yeah. He had an outstanding year his senior year. He's a good athlete.
Yeah, and a heck of a nice fella, too.
Yeah. I've known him all over the years. I see him every once in a while in Arizona.
Yeah, I spoke with him. It's been, several months ago, but... I know he had other things to do, but he just, said, when you get through asking questions, we'll stop, but just keep going. I guess we must have spoken for an hour and a half. Really enjoyed it. Okay. The Cubs, as I said, were not very active in it. It was, I guess Mr. Wrigley was the one who decided how the money was spent in the long run. What was his attitude, if you recall, toward bonus babies?
I don't recall anything about that. The general manager handled that, and I don't recall Mr. Wrigley getting involved. He may have through the general manager when a situation of that nature came up.
Okay, but so as far as you know, then there was really no restrictions. As far as, okay.
I've never known of any restrictions. All the years I was there, if we would reach a point, we would go so far, and that was it. We had a determining or a final decision that we'd make. We'd go so far, and that was it.
Were there other boys that you recall being asked to look at that came under the heading of bonus baby, not ones that you signed, of course, but other kids in that area.
During that time?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't recall any. I've gone through what records I have or what information I have here. A lot of it I didn't keep after I retired.
And, sure.
I don't recall any offhand. When somebody mentions a name to me sometime, I might be able to refresh my memory.
Well, it's been real hard even determining, you know, 40 years later, who were the bonus babies. I mean, of course, the guys like Kaline and Koufax and Killebrew, everybody knows were, but there are some fellows that, you know, the 2 years they were required to sit on the bench, they ended up playing four games and then disappeared. It's awful hard to determine if they were indeed bonus babies or not. So finding names of boys who weren't signed is really tricky.
Yeah.
Well, you had three other boys in that time who were very young men who did not receive bonus contracts. A boy named John Briggs. Another one, John Briggs, Jonathan Briggs.
Briggs?
Yeah. Signed in 50, well, it came to the Cubs in 56. I'll tell you a little bit more about him. These boys were just pretty much in passing. He was a right-handed pitcher. Came up first in 56 when he was 19 years old. Do you recall him?
I don't.
Okay, neither does anybody else. Another young man named High Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. He pitched and he came up in 55 and he was about 20 years old at the time, but he was out of college.
Came up to the Cubs?
Yes, sir.
I remember that name, but I don't remember him pitching for the Cubs.
Okay, well, he pitched so little that, you might have been in the restroom at the time and missed the time he was there. How about Gordon Massa, M-A-S-S-A, 57, the last year of the bonus rule?
57, Gordon. What position?
He was a pitcher, too, I believe. I'm trying to find him on my list here. And
Gordon Massa,
left hand. No, I'm sorry, he was a catcher.
I couldn't remember him. I would have guessed a catcher. That's about the only recollection I have of him.
Okay. These boys didn't receive bonus contracts. I was wondering if there was a talk of it because they were very young when they came up and they were rushed through the minors. Well, the problems, obviously, of 18, 19, 20, even 21-year-old boys coming straight to the majors from amateur ball must have been great. Was there, with the Cubs, from your recollection, any problems with the manager or the coaches when these boys came in?
Any problem?
Yeah, well, you know, the somebody had to go when these young fellows came to the team, and I guess this could cause at least ill feelings, if nothing else, were the managers deprived of a veteran player to carry someone who has no experience?
No, I don't, not that I know of. I think they were all eager to get somebody that a young fellow that was reported on to have potential. They were interested in working with him, trying to bring him along.
Good. Stan Hack was a manager then, wasn't he? Was he at that time? Let me get the book out here. I think he was. He had a reputation far and wide of being one of the nicest men around anyhow.
Yeah, he was an easy fellow to get along with.
Yeah, it was Stan Hack when these boys signed. Now, a guy like Kaline, who happened to be in the right place at the right time, proved out to be an extremely good ball player, obviously. The Cubs, maybe not the boys, not in the right place at the right time, but all three of the Cubs' bonus babies proved to to be much, much better than the average when you look at the total career of the bonus babies. Even Kaiser, who was hurt but still had a productive year as when he was 19 years old, was there? And this is a question I don't, you know, you weren't in on all of them, so maybe you can't come in. Was there more? I don't know what the word is. More scouting, more discussion put in on these boys than you think perhaps other teams put in on their players.
No, I wouldn't think so. I think that all of those players that were considered in that category were pretty well scouted, and you evaluate a player when you see him on a given occasion. You might have a bad look at him sometimes. Somebody else has a good look at him. And that's the way the scouting business goes. Players don't play the same every day.
Yes, sir. That's all you can go on. That and the boys' makeup, as far as you can tell.
Try to get as much makeup as you can and see him in situations to determine that, see what his reactions are. And sometimes you're fortunate. You might see a game or two games, and you see everything that you could possibly want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times you can see him a half a dozen times, and you still haven't seen what you're looking for. And this fellow still may have good tools, but he just hasn't performed with the tools, the God-given tools that he has.
Right. It's an ongoing process.
There's no surefire way of determining it, I don't think. I don't think anybody else does.
No, it's... I think when you see who's drafted now and how they turn out, it's still a very inexact science. Well, you most familiar with Kendall, probably more so than anybody else. In your opinion, and this is strictly an opinion thing, if he were given the opportunity of K-Line, you know, put in the lineup and said, here, you've got a job, play, would he have made it at that age, at age 20, 21?
Kendall?
Yes, sir.
Well, he was given an opportunity. He did a pretty good job. I'd say he made it.
Oh, he did. He did. But I'm talking about in the second year, I guess is what we're talking about, the first full season that he was on the roster. Do you think he would have been? Because he was not an everyday player until... he was only a part-time player until, I can't even read my own writing, 1960, after he'd spent a year in the minors. But at the age of 20, 21, do you think he could have, if he'd been put in the lineup, would he have been able to remain there?
Well, that's a difficult thing to say. It depends on the competition he has. Who does he have to beat out?
Right, that's true.
The talent that you've got there. Sometimes you can put a player in right away and a young fella and suffer with him for a little while. And sometimes you can't do that. You've got to wait until he gets more experience and develops so he's ready to step in and take over. He has the confidence in himself to do it. But you take a college fella, he's got a pretty good chance. He's got all the tools that you're looking for. He's got a pretty good chance of how they can, what kind of pressure they can withstand. This is all determined by the opportunity to play and see how they react. Nobody knows how they're going to respond.
Right.
And you get into a situation like that where there's more pressure on them. Some athletes can stand the pressure. They thrive on pressure. Others wilt. And again, there's no guarantee that we're guaranteed. When you sign some of these fellows, it would be a much simpler profession in signing their job and signing some of these players.
Life in general would be much easier. Yes, sir. Do you remember a young man signed with Baltimore named Bruce Swango, S-W-A-N-G-O?
Swango, the name sounds vaguely.
He was a pitcher that evidently, I guess of the 16 teams, probably at least a dozen of them offered him money. And you talk about the pressure. He never played in a game because he couldn't, and he went to pieces in front of all the people that were out there. And he was released from his bonus contract. And then eventually signed on with, I think, the Yankees as a minor league outfielder, and still couldn't take the pressure of the people watching. So that's an excellent point that you make. There is no way to determine that.
No, you see it in all professional sports. Look at pro basketball, the money they're making now. Some of those fellows that have been outstanding college players struggle when they get into the pro ranks. Some of them, there's a few that go right in there and rise to the top.
Mm-hmm. The guy who figures out how to tell that's probably going to make an awful lot of money awful quickly.
That's right, and make it quick.
Well, I would work on it, except I don't know how to start. Okay, one more question, I think. This is a uniformly detested rule, this bonus rule that required the boys to spend 2 years. But what is your opinion? What was the general opinion of people in your position at that time of this rule?
Which rule are you talking about? There have been so many rules.
Oh, the bonus rules, goodness gracious. They changed them every half hour there for a while. But I'm talking about the one that required the boys to spend 2 years on the major league roster.
To spend 2 years on the major league roster?
Yeah, this is the rule that Kendall was signed under. He had to spend 2 years with the Cubs before he could be sent out. And Drabowski and Kaiser also.
Well, I think they were optioned out, weren't they?
After 2 years, yes, sir.
But not prior to that?
No, sir. They couldn't go out before that time.
I thought the first couple of years he alternated between a Texas club and Double A, I believe it was, and a big club.
No, let me get his minor league record here. No, the rule required that these boys stay on the major league roster for 2 years until the rule was canceled in 1957. But all right, Kendall joined the Cubs the end of June 1956. Spent 57 on the roster. 58, he was with the Cubs until the end of June, at which time they sent him to Fort Worth. So he was there the full 2 years, the half of 56, all of 57, and the half of 58. And there was about 60 of these boys that came under that ruling in those years.
And your question?
Basically, how detrimental to the boys' development was this having to sit on the bench for 2 years?
Well, that's pretty difficult to say.
It's may go right back to the question about talking about their makeup, which can't be determined.
That's right. And some of them thrive on that competition or that opportunity, and others, it seemingly hurts them. They don't recover from it.
It's an individual thing, right? I see. Okay. Okay, well, Vidi, thank you for your time. You have...
I'm sorry I didn't have much information.
Well, you did. You did. Any person I can talk to from this era is going to help, and I hope to be able to have a book ready to go to a publisher by the end of next summer. Anybody who helps me is going to get a copy of the book. So, you know, one of these days, open up your mailbox and you'll get a book.
Well, I'd appreciate that.
It may not be a New York Times bestseller, but doggone it, it'll be written. And I do...
I like to help out wherever I can, but my first year with the Cubs was 53.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of work around the office and spring training, and gradually worked into the scouting, so I was a little bit new at a particular time here, just a couple of years up there, and it's been a long time since 52, 53, and that's...
40 years.
40 years,
yeah.
40 years.
And it's surprising. I don't know. Different people are different. Some people I talk to, and they can tell me verbatim conversations that occurred at that time. And others,
people like that are guys that are very talkative, and they tell stories a lot. I say them over and over so many times that they remember them. They maybe not quite the same way. Originally,
yes, sir.
You get the gist of the thing.
Yeah,
I've never been that way to talk very much about players like this. I've tried to analyze them, and study them, and report on them, and make my opinion and my recommendation. And from there on, it's up to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
But some scouts, they keep talking about the players they signed or the ones they missed, trying to keep talking over and over.
Well, I think I'm more along your lines. I know the feeling. You know, what if it happened last week and I'm not, it's not still something important. I don't have it very sharply in my mind anymore.
So, but if I've helped you a little bit, why, I'm happy to do that. I hope it all turns out well for you.
Well, thank you. I hope so, too. Getting information from 40 years ago is a challenge, but it's available, and I will get it eventually.
Yeah, and I didn't keep a lot of stuff from years back. Now I'm beginning to wish that I had. I talked to a fellow the other day, and he happened to have an encyclopedia to find out when Kaiser signed. I didn't remember Kaiser, and I looked in a book that I had here when he was, we traded him away. I found it there.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I still can't visualize the fellow.
Big, tall boy. Farmer. He's not a farmer now, but he was then. He's a sheriff now in Oklahoma. He went, I think his record, high school record, was 49-1. So he certainly at least overpowered the local Oklahoma kids.
Did you talk to Bill Capps?
No, I didn't. No.
Bill Capps was probably a fellow that signed him.
Oh, really? Do you know where he's located? I can't find locations of a lot of people. That's one of the problems.
In Fort Worth, Texas. I believe it's Fort Worth. No, Arlington.
Arlington? Okay.
I've got his address someplace. I send him a Christmas card every year. I don't know if I've got it handy right now. Got a minute, I've got to look for a book here, but I...
Okay, I've got the time, yes, sir.
Arlington, Texas. His address is 1400 Navajo, N-A-V-A-J-O.
Okay.
Arlington, Texas, 76012.
Okay, great.
He has a phone number... area code 817-265-0519.
Great. Well, thank you very much. That
he worked to Texas and Oklahoma, and I'm pretty sure that he probably would have been the man that signed him. He would know a lot about it.
Okay. Well, that's great. Yeah, that really helps.
I give you more than I did. Maybe I've contributed that anyway.
Well, you have contributed. You know, just getting the feeling from the people of the time is important, and that's you have given me that. Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you for the call.
Okay, well, I hope everything is well up there in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Is it cold?
Yeah, it's a little chilly. It's, we haven't had any snow, just a few flakes over a period of 3 or 4 days. We've had a little bit of rain and mist and a few flakes, but it's not too bad. It's around in the 40s, 50s. I guess it's 55 today.
Oh, goodness. That's warmer than we are. I'm in Lexington, Kentucky, and we're about, I think it was 48 last time I listened to the radio about an hour ago. I hope for a mild winter. Goodness, I don't like cold winters.
That's why we go to Arizona. Since I retired, we go to Arizona right after the first year and stay out there for 3 months.
Yeah, good. Yeah, let Chicago have all the snow.
Yeah.
Okay, Beatty, thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, and good luck on your project.
Okay, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Tuesday, 2:15 p.m.